Good evening, everyone. Such sweetness to sit with you tonight. Thank you. Jack Kornfield, one of our teachers, says that the most treasured, most outstanding description of as healthy as one can get, the optimal mental health, is the four radiant abodes. Sometimes you hear the teachings as four pure abodes. But these are the radiant abodes. And they're not new to any of us. Loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity. And in the teachings, they are considered treasures because they are exquisitely simple. It's the universal expression of the open heart. Sometimes we wonder, what is an open heart? But when we touch peace and love and joy and compassion in ourselves, it transforms us. Into what? Well, being all that we can be as human beings. There's more to us, a lot more to us. So the four pure abodes have near enemies, and these near enemies help us distinguish between the real and the fake. Are we authentic? Are we real? Well, we're looking within ourselves to see for ourselves, where is our conditioning that has covered this heart, this open heart? And so we're going within looking for it all. The four abodes along with the near enemies. Attachment, pity, comparison, and indifference, which are all ways of disengaging, of separating ourselves, just out of fear. And the confusing thing about these near enemies is that they are just as important to be known as the four abodes. They're both sides of the coin because we're living in a dual existence. And so it's very valuable not only to know the four abodes, but it's very valuable to know when the enemies are there. Strong word, enemies, but you can kind of tell with time that true spirituality is not a removal or an escape from life. We just enter a life with a deeper vision. A deeper vision of what? Well, of ourselves. And that's not easy. Because we're self-centered. Not because we're evil. We're self-centered because we are conditioned to be self-centered. So who are we going to blame? So seeing or experiencing the interconnectedness of all of it brings the four abodes within us. They're there anyway. And that's what's so wonderful about the teachings, because the Buddha points, now look here. Now just think about that. It's not like, oh, let's memorize these four. It doesn't work that way. It's just that we are experiencing some inner peace and quiet, listening to the truth. And not only is that healthy, it's medicinal. It helps us. It's healing. We just don't understand. So it's the discovery that freedom lies in the mind of our own bodies and minds. That's why we're investigating. That's why we're getting to know ourselves in a most intimate way. And it's still scary as hell, even though I'm the only one that sees it. So we begin to honor it all. The good, the bad, and the ugly. Why? Because it is all. We're all of it. We're connected to all of it. And it's the wisdom that brings the sweet understanding of how it's all interconnected. So the near enemies may seem to be like the qualities that we are trying to open to in stillness and being quiet, but they can be mistaken for them. But they're not alike. And again, the Buddha wants us to know the difference. He's a great teacher. Because the near enemies depict how spirituality can be misunderstood. We get lost and we don't even know we're lost. Well, wait a minute, I'm on the spiritual path. Oh, wait a minute. Uh-huh. Are you? And these enemies can be misused to separate us, do the very opposite. So let's look at these one at a time. Love. And the near enemy of love is attachment. See if you think this is true. The near enemy of love is attachment. It can masquerade as love because why? Well, it says, I will love you conditionally. Only if you love me back. Only if you play my game I got set up for my life. Only if you do it the way I think you should be doing it. Whew, see the trap? Who would want it? I wouldn't want it. So it isn't love at all. It's just attachment. And attachment is rigid, and it's very different from love. And we know that. And when there's attachment, there's clinging and fear. And nothing's wrong with feeling this attachment. But again, that's why we work with the acronym RAIN. Because we want to recognize it all, not just the good. We want to recognize when we slip into the attachment to someone that we love. Because we will. Because we're human beings. We're living in a dualistic existence. So attachment grasps, demands. It's needy. And it aims to possess. And personal close relationship, sometimes we see this enmeshment, which describes a relationship where members are expected to think, feel, and believe certain ways. So where is the individual beauty? We're all connected, but we are also very, very unique. So, rules, these are rules that we mentally, or societally, make up. Rules created by mind instead of the heart. Mind, heart, two totally different perspectives. So ultimately, this relationship prevents true independence. I don't think Randy wants another Randy. And I know I don't want another Anita in this relationship. But at the same time, we do want to honor us as individuals. Going towards wisdom. Now, does it slip? Absolutely. After 53 years, it does. But what the practice does, along with the teachings, is it enables us to see the difference. And when we rein on it, when we begin to recognize it, all of it, allow it, then we begin to investigate it. We begin to see it for ourselves through another set of perception. Another perception. I don't think it's a set. That's within us. And then we begin to see, well, we're not these thoughts. We're not these mind states. We're not these bodies. So who are we? And that's the big question. That's the inquiry when we're in stillness, because it is being quiet and still that wisdom arises. Jack was quoting Tara Brach in this quote. He says, the best way to feel closer to the people we love, he says, in according to Tara Brach, it begins with examining our beliefs about ourselves, because insecurity and self-judgment can hurt our chances of having deep, satisfying relationships. All right, the second one, compassion. And again, compassion, we know it's within us. But again, we live in a dualistic society. So what else can we expect? Well, we can expect compassion along with pity is the near enemy. Or despair. We don't know what to do with the sorrow. We don't know what to do with the grief. So the near enemy of compassion is pity. And it will bog us down faster than anything, especially up close what we're seeing in the last couple of years. Pity says, oh, poor, poor people. I feel so sorry for them. Pity sees them as different from ourselves. And I've talked about this before. It sets up a separation between ourselves and others. That's you. This is me. That's not that doesn't connect. And there's a remoteness to that type of experience. But it gratifies, and this is important, it gratifies the separate sense of self. Why wouldn't it? Because it's me looking at you. So compassion, on the other hand, recognizes the suffering of others. Now listen, this is the point, is a reflection of our own pain. We feel it, we just don't know what to do with it. All of a sudden we see or hear and it hurts and there's the pain. Do we get angry? Do we put more anger out there? What do we do with the pain of the world? We are the world. So guess what? It's our pain. So my teachers have taught me, you know how to feel. You know how to deeply feel. Take it within. Take it within your heart and hold it. Okay, pain, here you are. I feel it. Feel it. I'm with you. I know you. And it's radical for me anyway, because I've learned that. And it's a whole different type of holding the pain of the universe. And that's all inclusive. It's our pain, whether we want to acknowledge it or understand it. Our suffering is the world's suffering. And going within and feeling completely the suffering of the Ukrainian people, holding it in our hearts with this intention. The hurt is still there. So we can't get rid of the hurt. But we can acknowledge that we all know it. And we all have this compassionate feeling. So it's the very opposite of feeling sorry for people. Or getting bogged down mentally with mind states and all kinds of stories that keep us from the preciousness of the present moment. The next one is joy, mudita, versus comparison. We know this one. This is sympathetic joy, though. It's the ability to feel joy in the happiness of others. How often do you see that? When I was principal of an elementary school, we'd have 6-week celebrations all through the year. There were 6 of them. And we took great effort in making sure everyone was celebrated all the time, many times, for a variety of reasons. Not fake in a fake way, but what we notice. And so 1 6-week, I'd say, we had big numbers, 600-700 kids. And I'd say to them every 6 weeks, you know, we're going to be happy for those that were recognized this 6 weeks. But what do the rest of us do? Okay, I can give you something to do. Practice. I didn't say be it. I said practice being happy for others. Because then you'll grow up and be the adult that is happy for others. And if we can touch that within ourselves, how much more happiness are we going to have? Gobs and gobs and gobs and gobs is going to be just nothing but joy. That balances the suffering. Suffering with us. Having joy for all of us. So jealousy is the enemy, of course. and compares our joy to that of another. It separates us and believes that joy is limited. If others have it, there will be not enough for the rest of us. We want to make sure we get ours. So true shared joy is joy in being, in aliveness. It's an open-hearted celebration of our life with one another. Shared joy, shared suffering. So equanimity, the fourth one, upeka, versus indifference. And again, this indifference is going to come up in all of us, along with the equanimity. And the near enemy of equanimity is indifference or callousness. Oh, I've been practicing. I'm a meditator, you know. I'm calm and collected. I'm not attached. Well, it doesn't matter what happens anyway, because it's all temporary. And again, the separate self may feel a certain relief from that. We withdraw from experience and from the energies of life. But indifference is based on fear. True equanimity is not withdrawal of anything. It is a balanced engagement with all aspects of life. It's an opening to the whole of life. All of it. The good, the bad, and the ugly. With composure and ease of mind. Accepting the beautiful and the terrifying. Equanimity embraces the loved and the unloved. The agreeable with the disagreeable. The pleasure with the pain. It eliminates clinging and aversion. So what a treasure they are. What a treasure they are. And they say, okay, yeah, okay, I want it all. I want these four abodes to be opened. Well, that's what we're doing. We're practicing. Even though it sounds simple, it is not easy. But again, there's an ancient teaching that's been tried and true for many, many years by lots of people that say, that continue saying, we can be happier than we are, a lot happier. And this is the way. Thank you, sweet people. We'll stop. Randy will come. And then we'll, in our question and answer, we will give everybody an opportunity to see if they did their homework. We'll check you off if you did.
Go ahead, start.
So the last week, the homework was make a date with nature. Make a date with nature. So those of you who want to share, that's a good time to do. Also, one of our homework was to set up where we could practice the sacred pause. So you might want to comment on that. And then another homework was a kindness to oneself. Can we just do one for 1 week? Can we just do a sacred pause for 1 week? Can we make a date with nature? Yeah, it's a first step. So you can kind of see where we're pointing ourselves. So...